Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 13th, 2012, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, we finally had a home game again. We haven't had one in a while.
Yeah, you know what's funny about it is Gambit, our host this last week, had posted a picture of the infamous hand that we're going to be talking about here on Facebook, and a couple of his Facebook friends who listened to the show was like, wow, I didn't know you guys still played a home game. And I feel terrible about that because I usually host them, and we've just been so busy we haven't been able to get everybody together at the right time. Yeah. So I appreciate the fact that Gambit was actually able to get us all together, and hopefully we'll get another one at my house going here pretty soon. But well, we certainly made up for time with stuff to talk about on the show here.
Yeah.
One night.
Well, you know, it's funny because two of the last three home games that we've played, I got coolered beyond any expectation that you could imagine. And it's funny because it always happens in No Limit, even though every 15 minutes we call a different game. I can't recall like having like a set of or set or something like that with someone in like limit hold'em, or you know, having some big stud hand against another stud. You know what I mean? It's always when it comes to No Limit hold'em, and it's always a cooler, and I'm always on the bad end of it.
Yeah, so, and I'll interject here real quick just because I know some of our listeners are going, oh my gosh, another Chris Cosenza bad beat story. And I'm going to say that these coolers are so cold that a Sub-Zero fridge would say, dude, sorry, man, I can't keep these hands cold. You're going to have to find something else. That's how cold they were.
Yeah, it's not like, some guy had 3-4, and I, you know. It was the last home game, or the game before last, or whatever, was at Doc's house. And, you know, I had pocket queens, and the other guy had pocket tens. I flopped set over set. And, of course, on a turn, he quads on me, and we get it all in. This time, it's like the third hand of No Limit Hold'em. I'm up like $30, and this is great, too, because we only buy in for $50 because it's a 1-2 game at Gambit Toss, which I appreciate and we'll talk about later. And so I'm up a bunch already, and I'm like, this is great. And I got Ante Up King on my left, our friend Keith from the forums and from the cruises and stuff, and I think there's a limp, maybe a limp or two when it gets to me. And it's like we always play it 25 cent, 50 cent because we buy for 50, so that seems like the right amount. And I'm dealing, and I have two black aces. So I have two aces in position, a couple of limpers. So I make it like 250 to go. And in the small blind, Keith calls, and you're on the phone with someone who's calling you from like Las Vegas at 11:30 at night. We were all laughing about that. So you fold, everybody else gets out of the way. It's me and him. And I have pocket aces. The flop comes 8-8-4, three suits. So he checks to me. I bet, you know, like 6. He calls. So now when he calls, I'm like, you know, does he have like his own pair or does he really have an 8? So on the turn, it's a king. And now I'm like, maybe he has ace king. Hopefully he hits the king here. So he checks to me again. So now I'm thinking I probably should check here, but does he really have an 8? And so I bet like 10. And he calls. So now I'm convinced he has an 8. And I'm like, I'm shutting it down. If he bets out on the river, I'm going to either fold or hope it's, you know, cheap enough to call. Well, the river's an ace. And it gives me top boat. And, of course, we talking about it being a cooler hand, we know what he has. So he checks to me. I bet 14. And he only has, like, 30 left. So he goes all in for another 16 or whatever it was. And, of course, I insta-call and go, ace is full. And he says, quads. And I just, like... I just don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do anymore. It's so brutal. When you have pocket aces and you make aces full, you know, you're going to lose all your money. And it seems to be happening more and more to me. I don't remember anyone else getting cooler like this in any of our home games. Do you?
Buddy, it couldn't happen to a better guy.
So. Yeah, I know. But, hey, okay, just for the record, tell the NF Nation, how did I handle it?
Yes, well, I know. You know, I'm beginning to get really worried because the last year and a half, maybe 2 years now, it's been a super calm Chris Cassenza. I'm worried you're on some kind of drugs. You're going to feel the next day any of drugs, so I hope that's not the case. But
no, I'm not failing
now,
no drug tests.
Of course. It was only, what, 40, 50 bucks you lost on this hand, right?
Yeah.
It was 500.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'd be buying Gammon a new table right now. So.
Well, you know, in Frank's game, we played, we buy in for more, though. And in that game, I still ended up losing, like, $110 or so, and it was like a $200 pot, and I took that one fine too. And the part that I'm really most proud of is that that knocked me down to like $22 or $21, and I ended up winning $150 that night.
After
all that, and it was only about an hour and a half left to play, so I felt really good. I did really well in PLO, and just I kept it calm. And like you're right, it said, you know, hey, right now I'm only down $20-something really on the night. It's not that big of a deal. Just regroup and play your best poker. And I did. So I felt really good about it. But it's just, it's remarkable how many times I'm getting cooler in these games. You know, I can't blame him for calling me. He's got pocket eights.
I mean, everybody played it right.
So. Yeah. And I probably could have checked the turn, but it makes no difference. I'm getting it in on the river anyway. So it made no difference on that hand. You know, I was paying a lot of attention, unlike my partner, when he was playing during the night. It's pretty funny. You know, I'm not used to everybody making fun of you, just me. This was great. Everybody was taking shots at you because we were playing. What game was it? Was it Badoogie or Deuce of Seven? It was Badoogie, right?
It was, I don't know. It was one of the, it might have been Deuce of Seven.
Okay.
But it could have been Badoogie. Yeah, I don't know. They're all the same, right?
Yeah.
They all have three draws or four, you know. Depending on the house rules.
So we're playing in the game, and Scott's like, Pat, I think. Were you Pat a couple of times?
Oh, yeah, I always Pat in those games because I like to have people draw at me and break their hands. So I patted, and then, of course, everybody caught up. And all kinds of crazy betting, and I'm like, shoot, there's too much money in the pot to fold now. I'll break my hand and see if I can improve because I had three. It must have been Badoogie because I had three. I had a strong three-card Badoogie. I mean, actually, I had a full Badoogie, but I had, you know, like ace-deuce tray or something, or ace-deuce-four or something. And
right.
So I'm like, all right, well, you know what? Hey, it's too much money to fold. I'll call and break it and draw. So I call, and I throw a card away, and everybody starts laughing. Like, Scott, the hand's over, man. You gotta show your hand. Of course, you don't have a hand now because you threw a card away, but... So, you know, here's the thing. I love these games, and I actually called both the... Actually, I didn't call Badoogie. I was going to call Badoogie. Somebody else called it, and then I called Deuce the Seven. Because I like those triple draw games. But I do. I have this problem where I can't count the draws. Because it is. It's not, you know, this is not rocket science confusing. But, you know, you've got, you know, you got a round of betting, and then you draw... And then you bet again, and sometimes it gets confusing when you've got people that pat in the middle, and you know other people are drawing, and cards are flying across the air. It's just too much to handle.
Now, before we get like 45 people to email us and say, that's why the dealer takes the burn cards and puts them underneath the muck or underneath the pot so you can see what draw you're on, we do that. Scott just still doesn't pay attention.
Now, I will say in my defense, when I'm dealing, I... clearly enunciate. Second draw. And I don't think everybody does that. I'm not criticizing whoever is dealing that particular hand. But
right.
You got to make it easier for the idiots like me out there. But, yeah, so, obviously I didn't win that hand. But, you know, we were joking before that hand, actually, because I think this is a trouble a lot of home games. When you have, like, a real table, when I call a real table, like one of the Opal tables.
Right.
You know, they're built for a dealer to be in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And the dealer never has to pitch the cards very far because he's in the center, right?
Yeah.
But in a home game, when you're self-dealing, the deal moves around. So if you're, like, in the eight seat, like I was, would have been an eight seat, I guess. You know, you've got a four-county pitch to get to the people down in the two and the three seat. And that's not easy for us amateurs.
Oh, my
God. You got a fan blowing above it, too. Some cards can, you know, a lot of things can go wrong. And, you know, so you started joking about how instead of having free poker classes on our cruise, that we should have free dealing classes.
I'm telling you, we need to have them. First of all, a lot of people, you can always tell the internet players when they join a home game because they have no idea how to shuffle, no idea how to nothing. But really, it's not just the distance that we make fun of. I mean, it's the whole pitching, the whole everything. It's just hilarious how people just can't deal. And like Faso and I and Mark are like the only ones who like can deal. Everyone else is kind of like just, can you throw that down to him? Can you pass that over? Can you get the cards? I mean, it's just hilarious. And I don't think it's just the fact. I love when you're on the end and you throw one, the card turns over, and you automatically look up to the fan to see if the fan's going.
Well, the fan caught it once.
Yeah, the fan caught it once.
What's funny about this story is, oh, hey, me and Gambit and Faust are the only ones that know how to deal with the game. Where were you sitting? You were sitting in the middle of the table. Where was Gambit sitting? He was sitting in the middle of the table. So I really think Faso is the only skilled dealer at the table because he was my polar opposite and seemed to be able to get the cards.
You know why? It's because you make absolutely no effort, okay? You just sit there and you deal with your wrists rather than your entire arm. You know, it's like if you can't flick it with your wrist, you know what I hate too when you guys, even like Eric and all the other guys, you like kind of leave the cards like in front of you, but not really in front of the actual person. So we're always like, which cards are ours? Which ones are yours? I mean, I can't say, it's got to be 10 times a night we got to be like, hold on, hold on. And then like play this sort of shuffle, like three card Monty, move the cards around. And it's like, come on, think about how long your arm is. Think about if you leaned on a table and you leaned your arm all the way out, you'd be halfway across the table. If you can't flick a card 18 inches, what good are you?
Well, there's gale force winds in that house with a fan blowing.
A fan. So. That's even more of a reason why you should be reaching out and dealing, not relying on the entire world to push the cards around for you.
Well, you know, I want a little credit here because, you know, I'm not a big fan of this seven decks at the table thing that Gambit likes to have. And I did not complain about this at all this time. I think I focused on it. I shuffled when I was supposed to be shuffling. I attempted to deal when I was supposed to be dealing. And I focused on that night. So I you forget about the whole draws and stuff and whether I got there or not. I just didn't mess up the second shuffle.
No, you did really well.
Baby steps.
You did really well, and I have to admit, we always talk about it on the show, and I really just do not like the extra deck. I mean, I guess we do get more hands in, which is fine with me, because I always want to play as many hands as possible, but I just don't like... I'm always paying attention to who's passing me the deck, or who I'm passing it to, or if I'm cutting, or if I'm shuffling, or if I'm dealing. There's so many things that you have to do. You know, and while you're doing the shuffling, someone else is dealing. And if you're doing a stud game, it's like you're shuffling and trying to pay attention to who's got what. And should I be concerned by that card? Wait, I haven't looked at my whole cards yet. Well, I'm still shuffling. Well, I'm looking at my whole cards. Well, now that I've looked at my whole cards, they're folding because it took me a couple seconds to get to my whole cards because I was busy shuffling. Or, you know, it's just there's just one extra deck. And it's like I just don't really see the reason for it. I mean, I don't think it weighs more heavily toward, hey, we're going to get that many more hands versus how confusing it is or how many times we have to stop because we don't know who's shuffling or who's dealing or whatever. And I just really don't like it. I really don't.
Well, you know what I just thought of when you were on your little rant there? You know, one of our grades cruise employees, Ramsey, he always likes to post on Facebook, first world problems. You know, everybody else is having a problem getting clean drinking water, finding their next meal in. Oh my gosh, I've got to shuffle two decks at the home game. First world problems, buddy.
No, I'm not complaining. I just don't like it. You know, if you want to do it, that's fine. We'll do it and we'll get along.
I'm not going to try to talk you out of it, man.
Yeah, I just don't like it, you know. But
the Scott Long home game is going to always be a driving Miss Daisy game. So, you know, we're going to have...
But, you know, I like Mark's
one
game.
One deck and we're going to have fun and talk to each other.
Yeah, I like Gambit's game. You know, I like it because... it's a smaller buy-in and lower limits, and I can speculate and have fun and play more hands. And you don't like low limits, huh?
Well, no. I mean, here's the thing. I thought it was interesting because you were we were talking this week, and you're like, you know, hey, I really like Gambit's game because you know I can speculate a little bit. Now, you know, his game we play one Skittle, two Skittles. And when we play at my house, it's two Skittles, four Skittles. And you're like, yeah, I really like this because I can speculate. And I was thinking at the time, and you know, we were talking about other stuff, so I didn't want to get off on a tangent. I said, hey, let's leave it for the show. We'll get off the tangent on the show. And I just have a problem focusing. It's too small for me. Uh-huh. And I'm not that I'm this big fat cat 400, 800 limit guy. But for some reason, and I think this is what's interesting to talk about, because really it's not that big of a jump.
Right.
1, 2, and 2, 4, right? But I just find myself not as engaged much. And I don't think I've ever walked away from his game with money in my pocket. I always blow through my buy-in. Now, fortunately, it's a smaller buy-in. And I just have trouble focusing, and I think that's what, you know, if I'm on the on Freud's couch trying to figure out why I can't count draws, I think that was probably part of it. I'm not as engaged in the game, and you seem to be more because you feel like you can speculate, I mean, and, very interesting that, you know, two of us have that kind of difference in it.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, for me, I think of everybody in that home game as a good player, and I don't necessarily mean like they're professional or anything,
right,
but I think we all study, I think we all read, I think we all play it seriously, I think we all engage in all of the games. So when I look at it, I look at it as competition rather than, hey, how much can I win today? Because obviously I want to win, but if it's 2-4 or 4-8 or 1-2 or 25-cent, 50-cent, I'm still playing against quality guys who are trying to win as much money as possible, regardless of the amount that we're betting. So that's why I stay focused, because I think the competition is still there, regardless of the amount of money I can win.
All right, so let me ask you this, because I think that's interesting, because you're like, you know, I can speculate in a game that's lower. If the limits don't matter, then why can't you speculate in 2-4?
Well, no,
you're just
because
there for competition.
You're not
there to win money or lose money.
I think that they, when you're buying in for 200 and you have 600 on you, and then you bump it to no limit hold'em when you're playing at 50 cent a dollar and it's $6 and you can lose 200 or 600 or whatever it is, then I think it's a little more intense. But yeah, I think you're right. I think I can relax a little more in gambit's game because it's half of everything. And you're right. I understand what you're saying, and I agree. It is, the competition's still the same, and it's not that I don't speculate in your game, but it costs more to speculate, and you can lose more. And it's not that I would play not that it would hurt me more if I lost a buy-in, because I never play in games that I can't afford what I bring to lose. But it's just so much easier to throw a quarter in when you're playing PLO, knowing that the most it's going to cost me is a dollar to see the flop, you know, than rather than it being 50-50 and it's going to cost me $3 or whatever it is. So I don't know. I just feel more comfortable playing with quality players and speculating with lower limits. Just feels more comfortable.
Hmm.
But I always enjoy, you know, hey, you're playing in stud or something, and you know, everyone, we make the dealer ante a dollar.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a different, it's a relaxed atmosphere. And even though your home game, it's still all same people, but it doesn't seem as relaxed as it does in Gambit's. We have fun and everything, but I don't think it seems as relaxed as it does in Gambit's home game. Right. And I think the money has a lot to do with it.
Well, you know, we are also very relaxed watching Papes during the home game. It was going on, and Gambit fired up his laptop and blazed out spectacularly in both tournaments. I promise Drunko666 that we would mention on the show that he won the first Papes title. And for folks that are new to the show or haven't, you know, we used to have Apes, our great online series on PokerStars. I miss you so much. Until our government protected us from ourselves. And then, so when that ended, a couple of listeners started up Papes, Play Apes, using the PokerStars Anti-Up Nation software. And so Drunko won the first title. And then you can get in on the action on Season 2 by looking for the Anti-Up Nation home game group on PokerStars, and also through the forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum. And, you know, I'm going to add to my New Year's resolutions. I'm already, you know, charting my play this year, like I mentioned. I'm also going to work on counting to three when we're playing draw games. And now third, I'm going to try to get in some of these Papes if I can find the time, because it was fun to watch them, some of the people, actually the, a bunch of people from the cruise were playing that night, and you know, I went to sit there and chat with them, and I missed that. I missed that interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, I played in one last year, I think. I don't think I played any more than that. And I had a lot of fun. And final tabled. Oh, yeah, baby. Final tabled. There was like six, there was like eight of us or nine of us, and I made the final table, so I felt pretty good about that.
Hey, it counts.
Hey, we have a hotline clip this week. You always like it when people call in to 813-448-1120 and make fun of us. So let's see what they have to say.
Hello, Antiope. Listen, not calling, looking for swag, just calling to give you guys a little information. After listening to your podcast, the newest podcast, just wanted to give Chris a little update. And that is that Bernard Lee, it's Bernard Lee, no longer represents Foxwoods. I know you guys are busy guys. You can't keep up with everything. Just trying to help you out. Hope you guys have a super week. Looking forward to the podcast as always. Well, hell, as a matter of fact, have a great year. Bye.
All right, now here's the thing. I'm not going to sit here and mock you about this. I mean, I'll mock you about lots of other things because no one's made more gas on any of PokerCast history than me.
Yeah.
But this is one of those things, you know, where I don't think unless you are a host of a show or something, you realize how hard this is sometimes.
Yeah.
And I give a lot of credit to, like, you know, football announcers now, because in the past I used to be like, you know, Brian Miller, like, that's why Vance Lombardi was the greatest coach in Green Bay Packer history. And I'm like, dude, it's Vince. How can you mess that up? And I'm sure there's, like, you know, the co-host is sitting there like, oh my gosh, Brian, it's Vince. And there's some guy in the truck out in the parking lot going, it's Vince! And he doesn't correct it or anything. I mean, that's the same thing. I mean, you were on a roll, man. You were smoking. And whatever we're talking, I don't even know what we're talking about this time. But I don't know if you called him Benny or...
I can't Blase remember.
Or Brian or whatever, but you called him something, and I caught it. I was going to double back, you know. I had your back, you know, man. I'm your partner. And I was going to say, yo, hey, I think you met Bernard. But you were rolling. You were steamrolling through your thing, and I couldn't get a word in edgewise. And so then I'm like, yeah, forget it. By the time I got to the point where I was going to correct it, it was already passed. But that's just the nature of broadcasting, whether it's a poker cast or a football game.
Yeah, you know, and I recall specifically that moment when I said his name. That I flubbed it. And I'm like, I know Bernard Lee. We've hung out with him. I've talked to him numerous times. He even considered writing for us for a little while. I know the guy. I mean, just you're talking and it just comes out that way. And then you're like, hell with it. And the other thing, too, is I wasn't certain about the Foxwoods deal. I was pretty sure that it was gone. But yeah. I was just trying to bring up an example of someone who had a sponsored deal with a casino because we were talking about it then. And I know it's Bernard Lee, and I know he's not with Foxes anymore. I apologize.
Yeah, what's funny about that is Bernard actually called us after that deal, you know, that expired or whatever. And so we clearly knew, and I can't even remember us even talking about it. I mean, that show was so last week.
That's so 46 seconds ago.
All right, well, our anonymous caller said he didn't want any swag, but that's not the way we do things here at Antiope, so... You know, if he can email us at podcast@antiopemagazine.com with his phone number, because that's the only way we can identify you, I'll be happy to give him a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games. That comes from element26.net.
Well, we got a mailbag, too. We're just rolling in it this week.
Yeah, and I like this one. We had a little discussion about this last night, so.
George Hunt from Chicago says he was sitting in a 1-2 no-limit game in Las Vegas and took a break to go to the bathroom. When he got back to his seat, his stack was gone. He asked the dealer...
Gone? Yeah. He's SOL.
SOL, buddy. I hope enough people know that reference. So he says, I asked the dealer what the chips were, and he said, assuming they had been picked up for him, and the dealer said, you know, who may or may not have been the one that was there, I'm not sure. He said, but you weren't playing here. And an 80-year-old lady was playing here, and she just said she was tired and cashed out. I remember her because I called her back to give her a souvenir. This is the dealer talking now.
Yeah.
Apparently, he gave her a card protector. I don't know what else.
You gave her George's card protector.
Yeah. So the floor came over, and we figured out that the lady had been sitting in the 1-3 limit game on the next table over in the 10 seat. She had left her sweater and $36 in blue chips at her seat. The players at the table all said not to worry that they'll have it on tape, but the floor said they couldn't give me my money back and that they were treating this like a theft. They took no responsibility. They did give me her 36. I didn't ask for the sweater. When I got home, I persuaded the casino to give me a couple of comped future nights in compensation. Luckily, it only cost me $164. Sure makes me think twice about leaving my stack without at least asking my neighbor to keep an eye on it. What do you think?
Yeah, and unfortunately, we had to edit out some of the really funny stuff that George had in there, and I also edited out one of the facts that his stack was 200. So,
yeah.
You can do the math there. But yeah, you know, I immediately saw this and I wrote it back, and I'm like, wow, thanks for sending this. This is, it's one of those, you know, 10 on your side, eye on whatever things that you just need to, somebody needs to point out so you can think about it next time you go. I don't really know what the answer is. And, you know, we were talking last night to Jody Russell, our Andy, a Poker Cruise Poker Room manager, who does our Call to Floor segment most weeks, except for this week. And, you know, I mentioned this to him, and I'm like, you know, hey, just give us a little feedback, because you've been, you know, manager at a couple different rooms. You know, what's the procedure? Is this the right procedure? A long pause. That has never happened in one of my rooms.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is good to know that is rare. And, you know, I had a little bit about the fact that some of George's folks at his table were still there and clammed up and didn't say anything. Like, oh, yeah, that was him that was sitting there. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that they were being nefarious. I mean, you know, people come and go all the time. I mean, when I'm sitting there playing at a table, I wake up every once in a while. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I just check-raised the guy in the two-seat because I thought he was weak. And it's a totally different guy now.
Yeah.
Why didn't you sit down?
More of that great Scott Long attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And proofing the pages, man. It's more important. But yeah, I mean, I guess, and I think what George's other thought that we edited out here a little bit is just, you know, you have this like implied protection, you think, when you're playing at the poker table, because you know they got cameras everywhere. You can't do anything without them seeing you, and you know people routinely get up to go to the restroom, go get lunch or something, and leave their chips there, and you feel like they should be safe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then if they're not, that you got the camera, just like somebody I know at the World Series that lost all of his chips. they roll the tape back, and they make it right. And so it's odd to me that they wouldn't do something like that in this case. I mean, obviously, if the woman had left, I mean, I don't know what you're going to do. You can't get the money back from her, but... it's a little disheartening that there are places out there where you leave the chips and someone can take them and boom, you're gone.
Well, that's one thing that the poker room should insist on is having a player's card for every person who plays, and they have to swipe it. And if they don't swipe it, then they have to go get a new card and swipe that one. And it has their information on it. And then, I mean, most people, if they're thieves and they're planning to do things like this, then they're not going to give the right address or whatever it is. But for the most part, people are honest and they give their phone number or their address or whatever it is.
You have to give your driver's license to get a place.
Yeah, you have to give your driver's license. So,
which doesn't mean you can't forge it.
Right, but most of them aren't going to go through that extent to do it. Yeah. So if that happens, then you can literally just call this lady up and say, hey, we have you on tape stealing money from someone else by accident. You need to send us a check or come back or whatever. And so that's probably what they should be doing. But what Jody said was, in that situation where they told him he was pretty much SOL and they're treating him like a theft, that he said, you should say, get gaming down here right now. I want in this case it was Las Vegas, so I want the Nevada Gaming Commission down here right now and let them tell me what needs to be done and if it's a criminal act or if you guys need to be accountable for it. Because the funny thing is that I brought up when we were talking to Jody last night was, hey, you know, you can't leave the table and take your money with you and keep that seat.
Yeah.
They won't let you do that yet, so they insist you keep your money there. Yet they won't protect your money. So you can't be that way. I mean, that's just.
And of course, you know, this is one casino in place. So I mean, we don't know what the procedures are at other ones. I mean, I'm sure other ones might operate a little differently, but you never know. I mean, this is not something. You know, we talk about your first time at a casino, a new casino. You know, there's certain things you want to ask to be sure you understand the local rules there. But I don't want to add this to the list. You know, hey, I gotta go take a wee-wee. Hey, dealer, what's the deal if I get up and somebody else sits down and takes my chips? Are you gonna give them back to me?
Exactly.
I imagine a dealer would look at you like, WTF!
Yeah, exactly.
Just go take your lead. Come back here. It'll be fine.
Well, my suggestion was, if this is something that happens a lot, which I don't think it does, because this is the first time in 10 years we've heard it, but, you know, is to say, okay, well, take your chips with you, but we're gonna put a reserved thing, and then... you know, they have those round placards or chips that say how much money that they were given by the chip runner or got whatever. Put those in front of the person, how much money they have. And then Jody said, well, then sometimes they never come back. Well, I don't care if they don't come back. They don't come back when they don't have the stack. You take your stack off anyway and hold it for them. So you give them the 20 minutes. If they don't come back, then you just you pull it, and that's it. You know what I mean? And then you keep the whatever.
The only flaw on that, though, is, I mean, for a no-limit game, it's not that big a deal because you usually have a couple stacks in front of you.
Right.
But, you know, if you play like a 4-8 limit game, I mean, you probably got two or three racks of chips in front of you. And it takes a good 3 or 4 hands before you rack all your chips up anyhow when you get ready to leave. So
yeah,
to have to rack them all up when you have to go to the bathroom and come back, it's just inefficient. I mean, really, we're creating solutions to problems that we shouldn't. I mean, in the end, the casino should just protect that stack.
Yeah.
I mean, this shouldn't happen. And obviously, this seems like a you know, one of those weird situations, you know, where somebody comes back. And I mean, I've done that too. You come back, especially in these bigger poker rooms in Vegas. You're like, what seat was that?
Yeah.
And you look around for recognizable people. Like, oh, yeah, I was sitting next to the guy with the baseball cap screwed on backwards. All right, yeah, that's my seat. And this one's even more daunting because there's a sweater there. You would think this lady would be like, where's my sweater?
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that she sat down to 200 in red when she left 34 in blue, I mean, she's got to be pushing some senility issues there, I think, to not realize that she just took $200 off a game that she had 34 in 10 minutes ago.
Hey, you know, if I came back to my seat and I had an extra $164, I would suddenly become really tired and want to leave. you know what? It has been fun, guys. You know, I'm going to call it a night. See ya. Running like OJ through the Hertz counter.
Well, he's right, though. I mean, from now on, I really don't know what I'm going to do now. I'm really going to think about it. Because
it's just one of those things where it's just nice to know that this could happen.
And,
I mean, I don't really, you're right, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm probably not going to change anything, but just the fact that I know that this happened and, you know, maybe, you know, you could send a letter to gaming or you know, cause a bigger stink about it. In the end, I mean, it sounds like you got compensated. And it'd be surprising to me that there's a lot of rooms that wouldn't compensate you for this. Because I think there, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and we have a lot of lawyers listen to the show, but I think you're opening yourself up to some kind of, you know, lawsuit, whether legitimate or not here, if you just say, hey, sorry, you know, we didn't protect your chips.
Yeah, basically that double standard, just, you're forcing them to keep their money there, and they can't go to the bathroom. You make them keep their money there, and then you don't protect it for them. It's a double standard. You can't have that. So you got to protect their money, or you got to tell them to take their chips with them. And
just seems like an easy fix just to make it right.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, now, you know, there's. And then if you get in the habit of making it right, though, then you're opening yourself up to, you know, teams of fraudsters trying to do it. So, I mean, it's a tough decision, but interesting to know.
Brutal.
All right, George. Well, it's not worth $164, but we will be happy to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at Annie Up. store.com, and who knows, maybe it has intrinsic value of more than $164. Maybe you leave it on the back of your chair next time you're at this casino, some old lady will take it.
We don't have a call to floor this week. We felt like that might you know, sort of serve a little bit, compensate for it, but you know, we'll try to get another one for next week, and you know, if you do send us one and we use it, maybe we'll give you a deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. You pick up your own decks at Annie Up Store, and it's still around, still doing good, still chugging. Don't forget to check out our Annie Up Store, AnnieUpStore.com.
Well, today David Bloomberg is making a run to become our most contributing member of the Annie Up Nation here pretty soon.
Yeah.
And you know, he keeps sending us good stuff, so we keep putting him on the show. And he writes this week with two thoughts on a recent show. He said, first, thanks for the really good discussion, the Wire Act interpretation. I really enjoyed hearing both of your thoughts on it. One question I have, if this interpretation had been forth earlier, would it have meant that sites like Full Tilt would not have allegedly needed to pull the alleged stunts they allegedly did in order to get money to and from the sites? It's a lot of allegedlys.
Well, again, no, the Wire Act opinion is still just something that you'd still need to have legal online poker passed for them to have had their site anyway, you know, or whatever it was. I still think they still would have had to have done what they did until there was allegedly did until there was actually a poker state or federal law saying, you know, online poker is regulated and taxed and this is how you do it, then they wouldn't have to worry about using a third-party processor or whatever. So, no, I still think they still would have done what they had done if the Wire Act interpretation was the way it is. Hmm. Now,
I might disagree.
Well, I mean, how can you, there still isn't something that says it's legal to, I mean,
yeah,
they,
but here's the thing,
you know what I mean?
Is that, remember the UIGA, which is what all this was based on.
Right.
It didn't define what was illegal gaming. It just said a list of to-be-determined sites, which they went back and determined later on. Remember, this whole White Friday thing came because the Department of Justice actually asked itself for a ruling on the Wire Act, prompted by these two state lotteries. But, had this come down, then I think it would have been tough for the Department of Justice to decide that a site that is clearly just online poker and not sports betting would be illegal, unless it was defined expressly as illegal, which it isn't. So in that situation, I think that it would probably embolden these sites not to feel like they had to create golf ball companies or florists to do it. Now, it doesn't mean that they still wouldn't have got indicted, but I don't think they would have gone to the extent that they allegedly did to hide it.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel now that poker stars could come back in the United States then? Because of this?
I think that's different. Because I mean, it doesn't change the fact that they felt the need to allegedly sell golf balls instead of poker chips to get around this thing. The fact that now they would not have had to done it had this ruling been done. This doesn't change the fact that they did it. Allegedly.
Right.
Did it.
Or well, then how about this?
Can we get in the show?
What about the sites that aren't under indictment right now?
Well,
say,
yeah, and I think,
Party Poker or whatever.
I think that's the case now. I think the ones that are still serving the U.S. now, I think they should be open now to coding their transactions properly and not running afoul of what tripped up these other sites. I would hope that they're doing that. I hope that they're not stupid enough to be doing the same stuff that the other sites allegedly did.
Right.
As it is, but they certainly are more emboldened to do it now. Sure.
Okay. I just wondered if it still meant, now that opinion's there, now we can get federal or state to regulate this stuff. And since it's not regulated, they shouldn't still be serving U.S. customers until it is. So that's why I wasn't sure.
Well, the other thing, too, I meant to do, and I haven't, I assume this mystery list of illegal gaming sites exists somewhere. It has to, right?
Yeah.
And since it's a government thing, it's got to be a public record somewhere. I'd be interested to see what that list is. And then has that list changed since White Friday?
Right.
Whether somebody had to go back and actually, all right, this site's fine. And it's all kind of ridiculous anyhow, because we know that a domain can change overnight.
Right.
If you have PokerStars.com, and the next day it's PokerStars.eu. so kind of ridiculous. But this is really kind of an exercise in futility anyhow. We can't turn back the clock. But an interesting thing. But, we went on to I want to be sure to mention this, too. We talked about the four-legged stool.
Yeah.
For Omaha starting hands.
Yep.
And I thought for sure I read that somewhere, and I just couldn't place it in the heat of the battle. And I'm glad that he reminded me that it came from that great Omaha 8 book that I suggested he read, and actually I suggest everybody reads, Winning Omaha 8 by Mark Tenner and Lou Krieger. Absolutely phenomenal game for folks looking to play Omaha 8 and learning how to play. And that's where I read it.
See that? It's kind of like, it's something in the back of your brain, and your subconscious just pulls it out, and you think that you invented this thing, but you didn't. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But I was totally impressed with that that analogy, so
hats off to... Well, it's a great analogy. It certainly works.
Hats off to those two guys. Yeah, it's a great, great analogy.
Well, here's the other thing, too. In all the poker training going on out there, I mean, I think there's this feeling among some authors or people to come up with their own concepts.
Hmm.
And I'm not opposed to that, but if there's a good concept out there, somebody built a good car, I mean, why not just improve on that car?
Yeah.
Why feel like you have to go out and create a whole new car? So, I think it's good that people, that sometimes the people don't feel the need to really improve on things, but just get the word out. I mean, how many people haven't read this book and now they listen to the show and they got that that tip, and I'm glad we're giving them proper credit now, and, you know, so it helps. And then, you know, the next person come around can say, hey, the great work by Mark and Lou on this four-legged stool thing. Here's how we can make it better.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a five-legged stool.
Yeah.
With your four cards. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, how many books referenced Sklansky's group hand, you know, and all that stuff. So, I mean, clearly it's you know, even the semi-bluff and stuff like that. So, clearly, if there's something that's done right, and then there's no reason to make it any different. Just improve upon it. So, hey, Scott, who are the most famous poker players?
That's a good question. We will finally reveal that list next week, we promise, unless something else better comes up.
But in case you still were pondering it and want to get it into us, this is your last chance, last week to do it. We are wondering who the five most famous poker players are in the world. Now, you can interpret that any way you want. In history, of all time, whatever, or now, or on TV, or whatever. Just send us your top five to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, or even post it on our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum, and we'll devote our whole show next week to it. So we're pretty excited about that. And, of course, cruises. Don't forget our cruises. We got a fantastic 2012 schedule set. Three of them this year, March 17th out of Tampa, August 27th out of Port Canaveral, and November 10th out of Baltimore, and the Tampa cruise is shaping up nicely.
Yeah, we got good news this week. The Royal Caribbean extended our rate guaranteed deadline, which would have been over by last week, to the 19th of this month. So if you are lollygagging, not that any poker players ever do, you got an extra week here to get a call and get it booked at that guaranteed rate. And we are down to 7 balcony rooms and 9 inside rooms left.
Wow.
So, you know, don't lollygag any longer.
Lollygag.
And, you know, I love this next one, too. You know, I was going to mention our last piece of housekeeping anyhow, but Mark Wittig, one of our great listeners, gave us a perfect setup for it. And this is what he wrote. He's like, Scott and Chris, you know what cheers me up when I'm feeling a bunch of characters? Squiggly lines, blah, blah, blah. Maybe it's a swear word. I don't know. You know what cheers me up when I'm feeling... What? Rolled up aces over kings.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Check raising stupid tourists and taking huge pots off them. Yeah? Stacks and towers of checks I can't even see over. Playing all night, high limit hold'em at the Taj, where the sand turns to gold. Hearing that all the loyal listeners who have won swag in the past can now win swag again.
That is definitely a long way to go to say, hey, we got a new swag policy, you remember?
Yeah, so for the folks who didn't listen last week, now we are lifting that lifetime ban on swag after you got a piece of it. As long as you have one piece of swag in one calendar year, you've got more swag coming to you, and we added a new tiny 13-card poker app for Apple products and looking to do some other stuff, too, adding some swag to the Call to Flora segment. So participate in Annie Up, and we'll participate in your enjoyment of the game.
Hey, let's hear the Annie Up news desk. I'm very interested to see what happened out there.
All right, it's all White Friday this week. It's snowing out there, Chris.
It's all White Friday.
Alright, first off, the Department of Justice opinion limiting the scope of the Wire Act, the New Jersey Assembly and Senate both passed a bill allowing for internet gaming in that state. The bill passed last session too, but Governor Chris Christie vetoed it. However, a week ago, Christie announced that he's changed his opinion on the issue though.
Yep. Pieces are all just coming together, buddy. And that puzzle is online poker. It's coming. Also in Connecticut, Governor Danielle Malloy? I don't know.
It's your state. It's not mine, man.
Let's just say Dan Malloy.
I'm
says,
sure he loves nutmeg, though.
Says internet gaming is inevitable in his state, and that state officials should begin investigating how to handle it.
And finally, in the Nevada Gaming Board is accepting applications for companies wishing to operate the state's independent testing laboratories for online gaming. All kinds of stuff going on.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm going to throw a little bone to my my co-host and his rare blip of eternal optimism on White Friday here. I will admit that there is some serendipity going on here.
Uh-huh.
That this opinion came out when the New Jersey government was still in session.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. If any other state was in session, probably some other are now. it wouldn't have mattered too much. But New Jersey is the one that actually passed this thing last year.
Yeah.
And had this come out after the session, then we had to wait a whole another year for New Jersey to push it through. So this is actually the best state to be in session after we get this thing. They passed it. Governor's changed his mind. You know, obviously, he didn't say he's going to sign this bill, but it sounds like he probably will. And they're talking about having their site up and running by December this year. And so, to your point, this, I think, until it's actually really, people are actually really playing internet poker online again, I think that's when it's really going to kickstart the discussion. People say, oh my gosh, they actually made this happen.
Yeah.
And New Jersey is going to be the one that makes it happen, I think. So,
yep.
That was some serendipitous timing on that part.
Yeah. And you know, again, we've seen both sides of the coin. We've seen a lot of people still say it's not going to happen. It's going to take forever. And even our political columnist, Mark Dunbar, even wrote a column for our February issue saying, you know, don't hold your breath. It still takes forever to do things in the state, and as much as it does in the federal. So, but here's clearly an example where the timing was just right, and that DOJ opinion sparked this. There's no doubt about it, and it happened instantly. I mean, that didn't take long at all. Yeah. So Christy signs
it. When your session ends three weeks after the early comes out.
That's true. You know, maybe he'll sign it. When he's signing it, it'll happen when other sessions are reconvening and, you know, starting or whatever you call it. And then maybe they'll see that and it'll remind them to push it through in their own states. And who knows what's going to happen now?
Yeah. I'm already hearing talk in California and Kansas and some other places. So, you know, people are talking about it. And I certainly want to direct folks to go visit the Jurist. I think it's thejurist.com magazine, obviously, for lawyers. And they had a great column from one of the PPA lawyers, Patrick Fleming, recently that I read online. And, you know, had all that snooty pants legalese crap that the lawyers seem incapable of avoiding when they're writing. Of course, it's the Jurist, so, you know, they're going to have to write like that. I'll let them write there. But, so a lot of interesting stuff that we'd already talked about, we thought about. But I was reading it, and they made the point that, you know, the UIGA, of course, is dependent on state laws to enforce, which we knew. You know, they had to go to New York to, and their gaming laws in order to enforce it. And so, you know, what we've been talking about on the show in the last couple weeks, I think everybody's talking about, is this race for states to create their own online poker thing now, right?
Right.
And to get in there and get the money. And then when I realized when reading this is that quite the opposite could be happening in other states. There could be folks in, let's say, states like Alabama, Tennessee, that have been hostile to gaming, that say, oh, good golly, if we don't pass a law banning gaming now, and some federal law comes down, then some willy-nilly governor can just sign us up for that. So let's pass a law now, and that way we're ironclad, and our residents will not be subjected to this great game when it comes down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally thought of that last week, or when we were talking about White Friday. But I was on the optimist side of the fence, so I wasn't going to mention it. But I totally thought of that. I mean, obviously, you can pass a law in your own state if you don't want to do this, or the opt-in, opt-out thing is going to be interesting now, if that. But yeah, I did think of the other coin and say, hey, Alabama, which hates gambling, can totally say, you know, all right, well, you guys think that the DOJ says, no, you can't have it. Well, we're going to say you can't, and we're going to pass a law to do it. So, yeah, that's clear. But the states that don't want to have a law, they're going to opt out of it anyway if it's federal, you know. So,
well, right? Yes and no. I mean, it depends. I mean, it all depends on how the bill is written and stuff. But I would imagine that it doesn't necessarily, in some states, wouldn't necessarily take legislative approval to opt out. Or opt in, it could be something done on the executive level. So that's what I'm saying. If you have a governor that says, you know what, hey, we're going to opt in, and I'm going to make the legislature tell me that they need to opt out, then that's a little shining star there.
Right.
But when there's an actual law passed, you know, the governor can't do it. They can't just say, oh yeah, you know what, hey, we're going to opt in, even though the law's there. You can't do that. You just have to go back and change the law. And again, we know how slow that is. So I'm definitely more worried about that happening. Now, and certainly if I lived in one of those hostile states, I wouldn't be. I mean, we saw that here in Florida with, you know, there's a little town called DeBary.
Right.
And someone tried to open a paramutual facility so they could open a poker room, and eventually got shot down. And then the city went crazy, and they're like, well, not crazy, my opinion. And went, you know what? Hey, we're going to take this opportunity. We're going to pass a law banning poker in our city forever. So that way, we're just going to shut out the possibility that these people are going to be able to reorganize and get it done. And that's what they did. And, I mean, it's a very effective preemptive strike. And just hoping that other states have more important things to worry about than that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It'll be a nice problem to have, you know, to have these states have to think about it at least. And, you know, again, Alabama, that would suck for them if they decided to just say you can't play federally. You know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, you're right. We didn't really talk about that side of it, but I did think of it. I just didn't want to lose the argument.
You're a master debater.
You're a cunning linguist. Okay, so we're going to have a fresh baked O'Malley's move coming out of the oven right now.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are sitting at an 8-game mixed table and are currently in the $4-$8 Omaha High Only round. Normally, you would play Omaha High Only in an 8-game mix at pot limit, but in this case, we play it at fixed limit. The action is tight pre-flop and then gets aggressive after the flop. It's only a six-handed table, but the level of play is pretty even with no one that much better than anyone else. We've been playing for about an hour and a half and are down $15 from our original buy-in of $100, $85. The blinds post, and the action goes under the gun calls, under the gun plus one folds, cutoff calls, and we look down at 10 of diamonds, 9 of diamonds, 8 of clubs, 6 of clubs on the button. This is a decent starting hand for Omaha. We'd like to have a suited ace with this, but it's worth seeing a flop with. We call the $4, as does the small blind, and the big blind checks. Pot is $20, and we hit gin. 9 of spades, 7 of spades, 6 of hearts. We've got the nut straight, and top and bottom pair. We're not afraid of, well, anything here. The blinds check, as the under-the-gun player leads out $4 into the pot. Cutoff folds, and we raise to $8. Both blinds call, and the under-the-gun pops it to 12. We cap it, figuring the blinds are going to call anything at this point, and they do. The pot has now ballooned to $84, and the turn is the jack of clubs. Both blinds again check, and again the under-the-gun player leads out. Limits have gone up, so the minimum bet is $8. So we're placed to our first decision. Do we flat call, hoping both blinds keep tagging along? Are we worried about a third spade or the board pairing? Or are we in a flat-out raising battle that we're going to keep counter-firing at?
Joining us today is our 2011 Anti-Up Player of the Year, Daryl Fish. Known as D-Fish Online, Daryl has had a late surge in 2011 to capture our award, including a pair of top 10 finishes at two Florida WPT events. He has nearly $2 million in career tournament winnings, including a W Coupe title, and is, of course, a Florida native. Thanks for joining us today, Daryl.
Hey, Chris. No problem. Glad to be here.
Hey, you know, you've always done well playing live, but it's no secret you are an online beast. You know, when Black Friday put a kink in the online play, I really got to ask you, was there any part of you that kind of looked forward to playing even more live?
It's funny you ask that because obviously everybody kind of asks us, you know, how did you react to Black Friday and how did it affect you? And I had already began to make more of a transition back to live cash games a few months prior to Black Friday. So because I was getting a little burnout with the whole online tournament grind. So I was actually more prepared for it than most, I would say. And I was kind of already preparing myself for more of a live grind anyway. So it was a pretty easy transition for me.
Cool.
Oh, interesting to hear. You obviously live here in Florida. And when we got True Uncapped Poker about a year and a half ago, you said you were ecstatic. Has it lived up to your expectations? And where do you play most of the time now?
Yeah, I was pretty pumped for the laws to change, having, you know, been born and raised in Florida and played all over the place down here from when the time it was two straight limit. it was pretty exciting. And I was living in Vegas at the time, and I moved back here in preparation for the laws to change. And it hasn't quite lived up to my expectations yet, I would say, because it's still early in the process of everything. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, we don't even have a real casino yet. Right. And I think that's coming in the future. So it's really hard to like look at the past year or so and really judge based on such a small sample. But I mean, the games have been good. Mostly, you know, 5-10 and 10-25 is the biggest there is. But I mean, I have no problem with the games. And I play mostly at the Hard Rock and the Isle and Pompano. I split my time kind of between those two.
Excellent. Now, you know, you did play live before and you did sort of make the transition again earlier than most people. But how tough is it these days on the tour? You're doing well now, obviously. So is it harder since all these guys are forced to play after Black Friday?
Oh, yeah. I mean, live poker is not what it used to be. When I first started playing poker really seriously, I played mostly live in cash games and casinos, and it was just amazing how easy the money was. And even now, the smaller stakes games are toughening. Yeah. And the tournaments especially, the tournament circuit has gotten so difficult. And I mean, I've had more success in the Florida tournaments than anything else, and I would say those are much softer on average. I'm not going to go toot my own horn saying I'm like beating the best players in the world, you know. You know, like Matt Waxman or Jason Mercier are. But at the same time, you know, all the fields on average are getting tougher in live because of Black Friday and everything else. So, you know, it's definitely makes you work harder. And I feel like I have lately, and I feel like that's, you know, that's why I've done so well.
Great. Well, when we interviewed back in for our July 2010 issue, you listed Adam Levy and Matt Graham as major influences. Has that list changed over the past 18 months or so?
It's probably changed a bit. They haven't been in my life as much because, like, I don't live with either of them, and they, you know, Adam lives in Canada now and Matt lives in Texas, so we don't stay in touch as much. But really, I don't know, I've done more, I don't know, it's hard to really say, but I just rely on myself these days more than anything for learning in poker. I just feel like I can always figure things out on my own if I really try. And that if I just analyze, you know, situations and stuff on my own, it's better than, you know, trying to butt heads with someone else or maybe have someone, you know, mess with what I think is right. And I mean, I ask for opinions and I'm always interested to hear what people say. But I don't know, I kind of don't even really talk poker with anyone anymore. It's kind of strange.
Wow. You know, I did a little research and a lot of times I look at the live caches to see how you do and on Hendon Mob or wherever, and a lot of them are no limit hold'em and a few PLOs sprinkled in. Do you dabble in any other mixed games, or do you appreciate any other games besides those two?
Yeah, I do. I really like all forms of poker to some extent. I really like Omaha High-Low. That's actually like my favorite game. It's just not really spread as commonly in tournaments,
right,
other than the World Series. So so naturally the results are going to come more in the tournaments that are more common. But I also have trouble playing limit format tournaments for a few reasons. Like, they're boring as hell. It's structures are shit most of the time. It's just like kind of pointless, I feel like. So I mostly stick to the ones where I feel like I won't get bored and start just raising with any two.
Well, I'm sure being named Andy a Player of the Year is the pinnacle of your career. You've been looking forward to this since you were a little kid. But seriously, what does it mean to win any kind of award, including this one?
Yeah, you know, it's always rewarding. It gives you a sense of entitlement and gives you, you know, some motivation and shows you that you've actually, you know, accomplished something, which is something that people always kind of wonder what the difference between cash games and tournaments is. And that's one of the biggest differences, is the feeling of competition, the fact that you're actually like winning something, or like there's, you know, there's some notoriety to it. And I mean, I don't play poker for fame or notoriety, but it still feels good. And it definitely motivates you and, you know, makes you want to do more of the same thing you've been doing.
Well, speaking of that, then, do you ever alter your schedule based on like Player of the Year points for other awards or our award or whatever, but or other accolades? Have you ever thought about that, or do you just play what's best for you?
Well, to be honest, I've never really had to really think about it a whole lot. Because I never really, did that well in tournaments, where I was never like the Jason Mercier, where I was going to, you know, feel like I had a good shot of Bluff Player of the Year or whatever. But I don't know. I mostly just play poker based on how I feel, what I feel like doing. And, you know, that stuff, if it comes up and, you know, I'm close, you know, of course, like I might alter things a little bit. But I always just kind of, you know, play by feel and what I think I'm going to do well in. That's what I'm going to play. So.
Okay.
Now, you did say you played a lot in Florida, obviously, here. When you go to a series, do you look to play as many events as possible, or do you pick and choose from the available offerings?
Yeah, I try to do a little bit of both. I mean, I'm a grinder, and I like to put in hours and play as much as I can, especially at the World Series. I mean, I try to play 30-plus events every year. But in general, like, I try to cherry-pick a little bit and feel like, you know, certain tournaments have more value, and I'm better off, you know, being fresh as possible for that tournament than I am, you know, burning myself out playing a $200 or $300 the day before or whatever else. So I feel like, you know, you have to maintain a little bit of balance and make sure you play a lot, but at the same time, you know, don't get burnt out too much.
What's your feeling on all of these? Like, you obviously played a lot of these World Poker Tour events. Now, what's your feeling about these circuits and all these things being piled on top of each other? Do you feel like it's going to hurt the poker economy?
It's kind of crazy because this stuff kind of just started happening over the past, you know, year or so. Tournaments just being like 5 series per week or whatever. And I don't know, it's good and bad. I mean, it creates action, but at the same time, it makes everything smaller. So people look at that and say, oh, the fields are small, you know, poker is dying, whereas they don't realize there's just the same field in 4 other cities across the country.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's you know, it's give and take, but I think overall it's a good thing because it shows that poker is growing and, you know, the worst ones will die off. It's survival of the fittest. So, and especially in Florida, things are really booming in the tournament circuit down here. So I really feel like it's a good sign for the future.
Yeah, certainly is getting busy down here. All right, well, last question. Obviously, you're an elite player now, but do you still get your chops busted for having last name Fish?
Well, first of all, I don't know about calling myself an elite player, but I mean, if you guys want to say that, I'll take it. Yeah, I definitely do. Even the regulars at the casinos I play at, they always give me shit about it. I mean, it's like I've obviously heard it my whole life. Even before poker, I had to deal with it in school just for whatever reason. So it's one of those things I've learned to live with, and I kind of feel like it's a good thing overall for poker, but it's definitely, you know, something you have to have thick skin for.
Well, you are the Annie Up Player of the Year for 2011, so that makes you an elite player in our book.
Well, there you go. That's right.
Hey, Daryl, thanks for the time. Nice playing this year. Congratulations, and we really hope you defend the title next year. And next time we see you, we expect to see that beautiful Madison Jewelers bracelet on your wrist.
Oh, no doubt. Bling, bling, for sure.
Thanks, Daryl.
Hey, thanks, Chris Scott. Appreciate it, guys.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Elizabeth, and you are listening to the
Anti-Up PokerCast. Our hand of the week comes from downtown Canada again, Chris.
Downtown Canada?
Actually, no. Victoria, British Columbia.
Oh, okay. Where is that?
And, well, it's, you know, it's on the British side.
It's north of us.
No, it's on the west side. It's, you know, aren't you a big fan of the BC Lions?
No.
I'm sure they won the Grey Cup a couple years. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
I'm using jargon here.
I know what the Grey Cup is. I know Canadian football. I know TJ Cloutier.
Okay, well, the BC Lions are a Canadian football league.
All right, there you go. I like the Montreal Alouettes.
Yeah, I couldn't say it, so I didn't really like them. The Saskatchewan...
Rough Riders. Yeah. I know what I'm talking about. I just don't
just
know where
I like
Canada
to say Saskatchewan.
Is. I'm just trying to find out where Canada is, that's all.
Okay. Well, it's north of us.
Okay.
You know, if there were, it's cold right now. All right, now this comes from our new good friend, John. And, you know, I love John. What I love about John, not only did he send us a hand of the week that's good for us to talk about, but he sent a pronunciation guide for his name.
We should have had Bernard Lee do that.
Yes, absolutely. All right, says John Kaukian.
I think you missed that.
No, Kaukian.
No, there's an N.
Kaukian.
Yeah, you weren't saying the N. It's clearly there how to say it.
Well, that's just my southern accent.
southern Canada.
All right, John Kaukian. Kaukian. Well, man.
Keenan. Kaukian.
Gosh. See, the pronunciation guide is worthless. I can't even get it with that.
See, now nobody can actually call in and make fun of you about this because we're doing it now.
All right, John from British Columbia, Canada, sent us this great hand of the week here.
Okay.
And yeah, well, the classic longtime listener, first time actually following through a writer.
Cool.
All right, here we go. He wants to know, Chris, in this hand of the week, who played this hand worse? I love these ones. Because you see, he's setting himself up. See, it's very strategic. Because he's like, you know what? Hey, I screwed this up too. But maybe somebody else screwed it up more. I like it.
Okay.
Kind of passive aggressive. All right, so 1-2 no limit ring game at Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas.
Yep.
He says the player in seat four is an absolute wild man, straddling both under the gun and on the button, and then popping at $24 anytime it was limped to him. I played with this guy before.
Yeah, me too.
I couldn't get off the table fast enough.
I sucked out on him.
Yeah, it went the lucky ones.
Yeah.
All the other players were loose passive and not overly skilled. The button is in seat four. Our hero here is in seat six. He says, seat four, the button straddles to $4. He has $230 behind. Seat five calls to $3 with $325 behind. And remember, in a button straddle, the action starts to the small blind, right?
Okay, yep.
So small blind calls to $3. He has $325 behind. And action is to our hero in the big blind with ace, queen, offsuit. And he has $340 in his stack after he had luck boxed his stack up from 200.
Well, at least he admits that he got lucky to get 340 and didn't build it up.
He is a very astute listener of the show. He sent the pronunciation guy, knowing that I was still going to screw it up. And then he, you know, he luck boxes it up. So,
All right, so we're just supposed to decide what to do here, right?
Yes.
So I guess I would imagine that he's hoping that if he limps, everyone else will limp till it gets to this maniac, and then he'll raise.
Right.
That
seems to be the MO. So.
The problem I don't like with that strategy is that there's a lot of people to act between him and this guy still, right? Remembering this correctly?
He didn't say how many people were there.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I like hoping that no one else will raise till it gets to him. So I may make a raise here. I know that it, you know, everyone likes to trap the crazy guy, the crazy straddler, and pop it when he pops it. But I just feel like maybe ace-queen is not a great hand, you know. I might actually even consider folding it, to be honest with you. But I'm in a blind. I already got money invested, so. I don't know. I think I might actually raise with this hand and see what this guy does. I just don't like the idea of limping, hoping that four other guys are going to either fold or limp before it gets to him. And then even re-popping it, too. You know, it's ace-queen. It's not that great of a hand.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. It's off suit. It's really not. So there's no improvement there either. So I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'd play it for a raise if I'm going to play it at all. How's that sound? All
right.
What do you think?
It's $4 to you. What are you going to make it?
I'm gonna make it 16 or 20.
16 or 20?
Yeah.
Well, see, you kind of ruined my my little plan here because you actually mentioned you might actually fold because I was going to finally earn my too tight to life moniker because I'm folding this thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You're right. Ace Queen is one of those real trouble hands. I mean, how many pros have you talked to that have said they lost a gajillion dollars playing Ace Queen?
Yeah. They think it's the devil's hand.
It is. And we're out of position. We're in the big blind here. We have this crazy guy that we know is probably, based on what he's done, he's going to raise it anyhow, so we're going to have to play it fairly expensively and play against him out of position. Now, I understand, you know, when we play these people, you get focused on, hey, I need a good hand, and then I'm going to take this guy's stack.
Yeah.
Totally on board with that. I just don't think this is the situation. Yeah. Ace-queen is not good enough, and yeah, we're in bad position, and you know, I guess we're never going to get good position if he's always button raising. But this is not where I want to take a stand. I'd be happy just to fold here, begrudgingly, because if we didn't have this guy making this crazy thing, then maybe things are different. But I just know I'm going to have to put a lot of money in here before the flop. And then what are you hoping for with ace-queen?
Exactly.
You're hoping for a queen. You know, exactly. An ace is not going to be... You never feel confident with an ace with ace-queen. That's where people lose their money.
Yep. And,
so I'm not. I don't think I want to put $30 in this pot, hoping for a queen.
I think that the stack size has a lot to do with it too, because I can recall. Yeah. I think I was playing at the Palms, and I had ace queen against a guy very similar to this, and I was short stacked, and so I was willing to get it all in with ace queen in a cash game short stacked versus being fairly deep here since he's
$340 here.
So he's fairly deep here. So.
The crazy guy has 230, but still.
But still, that's $230. It's not 40 or something, you know. So
and he's not the only one in the hand. Remember?
Yep. Exactly.
Anybody else could be waking up with a good hand here. So.
Yep. So I, I'm leaning toward folding, but if I'm going to play it, I'm going to play it for a raise and try to get heads up with this guy and then bet any flop. So I think that if I'm going to raise, I'm going to make it, like I said, 16 to 20 or so. And if I'm not going to raise it, if I don't feel comfortable with it, I'm just going to fold it.
Well, I'm definitely not going to limp unless I'm planning on check raising, which I don't think you want to do. I mean, I don't want to limp here because I know I'm going to have to put $20-$30 in this pot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're right. I think either I'm going to raise here and try to get isolated with this crazy guy, or maybe, you know, these crazy guys fold every once in a while, too, and they don't play every hand.
Right, because he did say he only popped it when they limped to him. He didn't say that he's going to repop me
for
the hell
of
it.
You know,
so,
you're raising, you're taking away a little bit of his ammunition. So I can see I can see an argument for that. And but then, again, remember, I'm still out of position with this hand. So even if somebody else calls, then the whole reason I'm playing this is to get this guy stack, and I'm purposely betting to get him out of the hand, so that defeats that whole purpose.
Yeah, and if you focus too much on one player, you're going to lose your money to the other players. So you need
absolutely.
To. You need
That's
to
why I get up and
it.
Leave from these tables, because it's hard not to focus on this one guy.
Yeah.
All right, well, our hero decides on a limp, planning to instant raise to 80 after the guy makes his customary raise to 24.
Wow.
All right, you know, he missed a little risky, but he says this guy's on his third rebuy of 200 already, and I'd like to get a little bit of it. See? This is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, the guy, his bad play is making you play bad, and that's the real problem, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm not criticizing him. I fall for this every time I'm at a table with this guy, and that's why I've learned to get up and move to another table when these guys do, because I'm just incapable of breaking free from the God, I got to get that guy stack mentality.
Yeah.
And that just hurts you in the long. All right, so the next three guys fold. We get two callers with short stacks. We'll call two more folders. And then it gets to our button raiser. And he does the unexpected, Chris. Checks his option. Damn it.
That's because he knows, man. He knows that all these people are probably limping with a big hand.
He's smelling a rat. All right, so the pot's 21 bucks after the rake. Flop is ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, six of hearts. It is check to us in the big blind.
See, now this is where you're... maybe all these other guys were limping with a bigger ace than you. And if they weren't, maybe they had a regular ace. Maybe they've got ace eight now. You know what I mean?
Ace six.
This is where playing ace queen sucks.
Yep.
Hey, so I have to ask you, are your cats molesting you or what? What's the deal going on your end over there? You're killing the Antiup Nation. You're pounding on your microphone.
I'm sorry. I just got a little itchy ear there.
It's like the fourth or fifth time in the show. I thought maybe, you know, one of the cats or Sahara or something was, like, crawling over your head.
No, sorry.
All right. So we don't like ace-queen now. We have aces. We have a queen kicker.
I didn't like it before.
Yeah.
I definitely don't like it now.
Yeah, because even you said it before, too. We wanted to have the queen hit, at least, not the ace, because now we don't know where we are.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have aces, and we do have second-best kicker, and it checked to us, right? Did it?
Yeah,
you said?
Well, one check to us, yeah.
Jeez, 21 in the pot? Yeah, I guess I would bet, like, 15 and just see what happens, because it's not really a draw-heavy board. It's three suits, and, yeah, I mean, somebody has 7-9 or something, you know, but... I'm still going to make a bet and just to try to thin the field and maybe see if this maniac wants to do something. But I don't like having ace queen in this spot.
We play this ace queen. We got to, I think at this point, you got to bet just to see whether you can take it down or see what happens here. I don't think you want to. You can't hope that you can check this down and maybe hit a queen. That's just too passive. So,
right. You
know. But this is why I don't like to play ace queen, because I'm in a situation now where I feel like I have to bet.
And I guess there's an argument to be made that if this guy's truly a maniac, he might bet any two if we all check to him, and then you can check raise and thin the field. But again, you're just counting on too many other things to happen, and you can't rely on everyone else to do what you want them to do. So I think you got to try to thin the field yourself here and get some money in there.
Okay. Well, our hero decide that he wants to find out where he is and try to get a little value from any ace 10. Who plays ace 10?
Not me.
Ace jack hands. So he bets 20 bucks.
Yeah, I don't mind that bet. That's what I said I'd probably bet. That's fine. I don't know about the ace-10, ace-jack stuff coming to fruition, but, you know, it's possible. It's possible. But it's also possible ace-king or ace-8 is out, too, so.
Yeah, I'd be a little worried about ace-10 or ace-jack raising me, too. And then you get in a situation where you're out of position and, you know, a worse hand is raising you and you got to make a tough decision. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm only excited about getting value out of those hands if I know they're passive enough to just call down and be lucky enough not to hit their 10 or jack. All right. So seat 10, seat 1 calls. We have two callers. The button gets out of the way. The crazy guy.
Oh.
And a small blind calls.
See, that's why you don't focus on one guy, because he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, so now we're stuck with players that we're not focused on. We don't really know much about them. And we're out of position with ace vulnerable kicker.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're three-handed?
We're four-handed now. Four-handed. Yeah.
Okay.
And our hero says, I have no idea what type of information I just got from these three callers. In this spot.
Here's the information you got. You're behind. You're losing at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look at this board. I mean, really, what does anybody have here that's willing to call $20?
Yeah. It could be a 7-9, just because it wasn't raised.
All right, but that's one. Right.
That's one guy. And then it could be a better ace king, maybe, but I don't think they would raise, but. You never know.
Or an ace 8 or ace 6. An ace jack would probably just call here.
Yeah.
But that's about it, I think.
Yeah. But I think we're behind.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That many callers, they all can't have 7-9. I mean, the
fact that three of the callers, we have to be ahead of all three of these people now.
Yeah.
And I just can't see that happening. I mean, you got maybe one draw, you got one ace jack, the other guy has you somehow.
Yeah.
Some combination that has you.
Yep, I agree. There's just way too many combinations out there that beat us. To have three callers all have a hand that's inferior. Could be two pair, could be 6-8. Yeah, but you would think he'd raise because he's vulnerable. But
but that's got us, so.
Yeah, but that does have us beat. So I feel like right now I'm going to want to try to get to the end of this hand with as little money as possible.
Yeah, as little money as possible, and hopefully we'll spike the queen here, and, you know, we'll be lucky, and then we'll learn our lesson.
Yeah.
All right, the turn is the tray of diamonds. So our board is ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, six of hearts, tray of diamonds.
Okay, well, now a backdoor draw is creeping in on us, but really that doesn't help anyone.
I don't think it really does either, right? And the small blind checks to us again.
I'm going to check.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not going to put more. I know I'm behind. If I can feel it and know it, I'm not going to put more money in there. So unless I know that they're marginally ahead, but they, like with a kicker only. But there's no way to know that with three other players in the hand, so I'm checking.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm checking here, too, one of these other players could put a bet in. If the other two fold, then maybe I reassess. Maybe I think I've got a shot here. I don't know. I mean, somebody could be taking a stab at that point, but I'd rather be playing against one player than three.
Yeah.
All right, so our hero says he still has no idea where he is, where the other three are at. But I'd like to pick up the cash in the middle, so I grab a stack of reds, break it in half, and bet 50, knowing if I'm raised, I probably have to fold.
I love the literary writing of some of our... It's like, how about just saying I bet 50 bucks? No, he grabs 50, a stack of reds, breaks it in half, and bet it. You know, it's like captivating. I feel like I should have some hot cocoa and a fire roaring in the background. I don't like betting. I just don't like betting. I think
we're throwing $50 in this pot, saying if we get raised, we're gonna throw it away.
Yeah, why bet 50 if you're gonna fold it?
Yeah, I mean, might as well just fold it without betting. And if somebody bets, you know, 20, the next guy bets 20, and the other two people got out of the way, then you can consider putting that 20 in, and you're saving yourself $30, and maybe hit a queen.
Yeah, yeah.
Or an ace that makes you feel more confident. You know, I don't know. Yeah, I just don't see any reason to bet here.
No, me neither.
If particularly if your MO or your line is if somebody raises me, I'm out.
I mean, if you think that these guys are drawing somehow and you're convinced of it, or that they have weaker aces, then there's a reason to bet. But how could you know that from the action? I am not worried about
any draws here. Somebody has 7-9. Mike Sexton, God bless him. And if somebody's got it just turned a backdoor diamond draw, that's great too. Yay for you.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not worried about draws here, and yeah.
So I just don't see any reason to bet.
And, I mean, unless somebody had... I mean, really, I mean, what diamond draw makes sense here based on the $20 call on the flop?
Only 7-9 of diamonds.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean the diamonds really don't bother me at all. We already decided one guy might have 7-9, and we're not worried about him because we got him beat right now.
8-6 of diamonds maybe, but only if he truly believes he's ahead and he's slow playing, because I think an 8-6 would have raised somewhere in this.
So, right?
Yeah. But those two.
All right, well, here's where the literary part of his email comes in. The dealer announces $40 is the bet.
Oh, no.
Now I realize he grabbed the stack. He had already taken 20 of for the flop bet.
Oh, no.
Now he worries that the draws are almost getting the right price, not the 3-1 I was trying to charge. Again, I'm going to repeat. If there's draws in here, they're making mistakes anyhow, for the most part, I think. I'm not worried about the draws.
Jeez.
All right, so the next player to act shoves his last $59 in, Chris.
Oh, man.
And the next player calls off his last $56. So we have two all-ins now, and he gets to the small blind, who raises to 100.
Oh, my God.
Dealer confirms with the floor to ensure that the $100 is a legitimate raise. It is. And our hero is puzzled for about 3 minutes. Says he has to call 60 to win 354, almost 6-1.
Oh, my God.
Add to the discussion, and he recounts the stack and confirms that even with a call and a loss, he'd still be a small winner on the day at 216.
Oh, God. Oh, Darwin. Yeah, now, is everyone else is all in? Or, I mean, they're...
No, C5 still has some money behind our small blind that just raised us.
Oh, man, I gotta fold.
Raised after the two all-ins, by the way.
I'm folding. Because, yeah, you may beat the other two hands, but you still have C5, who came alive with that raise. Uh-huh. And so that means you're looking at a bet, a raise, a call of the raise all-in, and then a re-raise. You're not ahead. So you're hoping to hit, what, three queens? And even that might not be good. It might be up against a small set.
Aces up is what we were hoping for, yeah.
Yeah, aces up still might not even be good. You know? C5 could have a set easily, you know, and just slow played it. You know? I don't like the call here. I have to let it go.
A set here. We're essentially drawing dead, right?
Yeah, we are. If it's a set, we're definitely drawing dead. And then the other thing, too, is be happy that you did only bet 40 now and fold. And save 10 bucks.
Yep.
But I can't, even though I'm getting that much to my money, I'm literally having to beat three guys who are willing to put more money in the pot than I was. And three raise, is it one? A raise, a call, and then another raise. So I can't be ahead, and I can't count on those three outs as being, you know, properly statistically, it's a bad call to get three outs. So, you know, you would need like what 11-1 on your money, I guess, for that to be right. So I'm folding.
Yeah, you know, again, this is what we talk about in our poker 101. Just because it's a discount doesn't mean it's a good deal.
Yeah.
And a whole 60-1. Well, that sounds great, but if you have no shot of winning the hand, it's a terrible bet.
Yeah.
A terrible $60 call. And again, I get back to the fact that I don't have draws. If there are draws out here, then that changes things. But I really think at best we had the bronze medal right now.
Yeah.
And probably very little chance of ascending to gold, which is what we're going to need to do.
Yeah.
All right, so our hero calls, not knowing what he'll do on the river. See? Another problem.
Yeah.
All right, so he asks who would play this worse. I'm not ready to say it's him, but, you know, if I'm going to call, I got to know what I'm going to do on the river here. I got to assume that my stack's going in if I get a queen or an ace, probably. And I don't know that that's the right bet.
And the other thing, too, is...
It's called to hit an ace or a queen, right?
Yeah, and you and I always talk about not learning poker from TV, but the one thing that Mike Sexton always says on television is it's not what you're calling now, it's what you're going to have to call later.
Yeah.
And if you're not thinking about the river calling the bet, then you're not thinking ahead enough and you're not thinking of what to do, and that money you just put in the middle of that 100, you know, is going to be a lot more than 100 on the river, and you're going to have to hit three outs to hope to have the best hand, which you probably aren't going to have. So it's just a bad situation you got yourself in, and I would have folded there.
It's almost inconceivable to me to imagine that C5 does not bet on the river.
Yeah.
You're going to check raise on the turn. What card are you scared about on the river?
Yeah.
All right, well, the pod is now a mountainous $414. I agree, that's a pretty nice pot for a one, too.
That is a nice pot.
The river is the queen of spades.
Oh. Wow.
Boom goes the dynamite. Our final board now is the ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, six of hearts, tray of diamonds, queen of spades. We did get aces up, and good golly gravy, seat five checks to us, Chris.
Interesting. I think that, why would he check? Why would he check? I think he thinks he's beat.
See, I'm flummoxed here, too, because I said there's just no reason that to assume that he wouldn't bet.
I feel like we're in a side pot with this guy now, so we might have to bet now. Because if he checks to us, and the other two beat us, we win nothing. If this guy's checking, maybe he'll call a marginal bet because he had a better ace than us, or he had smaller two pair, and now we have to bet, I think, which is sick.
No, it's a very good point. I didn't think about this when I was responding to John initially. I mean, there is a case to be made here that seat five raised merely just to get us out of the way so we could he could win against these other two guys.
Yeah.
Since we've been the one driving the action, right? So theoretically, we should have the best hand here if he can get us off of it. After two people go all in, then if he's got a let's say an ace king or something, he might actually win this whole pot by getting us out. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
And a lot of people play that called,
way. Yeah, and since we called now, C5 or the small blind's like, ah, shoot, that didn't work.
You know, some
maybe
of the greatest
show down cheaply.
Greatest poker minds in the world. That's how you do it. You get the guy out who has the best hand, and your second best hand, you know, is better than the guy drawing or the third best hand. That's how you win. You know, especially in stud. So it's a great move by five, but he's got to not follow through there means that he thinks he's beat, I think. Okay, so I think we need to bet.
Here's the thing. Even if you believe that, he's got to have something to think that he can win the main pot with, right?
I think so. I think he might have something like two pair that are worse than ours now. Maybe he's the guy that does have the 6-8. Or ace-8.
Yeah.
You know. Interesting. Very interesting that it checks there. I think we have to bet.
Yeah, you know, the more you think about it, it's hard for me to imagine that this guy has something better than us now that he checked. The fact that we hit our queen there.
Yeah, why would he check? He wants to get more money out of you.
Yeah, if he's got two pair or better, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't continue betting.
Yeah.
So, you're right. I think at this point now, it's our shot. I'm not convinced that we won the main pot, but let's try to recoup as much as we can from this guy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll bet. I mean, I guess, what do we have left? Jesus.
Oh, gosh. Well, 100, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 200.
Wow. I guess I'd bet 100 on the end. See if he'll call.
Alright, well, our hero says his only bet is a shove, which he thinks his opponent would call, I'm sure. So he's getting more 3-1 to win 600 plus. So he has to decide whether he can beat any of these guys. And again, I don't think we're worried about the main pot at this point. So it's either the two all-in players could have sets, meaning I may only be playing for that 122 side pot. Our hero announces aces and queens.
Oh, he doesn't bet, huh?
Doesn't bet.
See, now, you have the whole pot's only 414. I don't think he needs to shove there. The entire pot is 414. The side is 122. But it's still only 414 you can win. I don't think I would bet over 200 now. There's no reason to. Try to value bet at least. Get something out of this guy. That way you win the side pot and your money back, and maybe a little more, you know. I would bet on the end.
140, 100 and... Yeah, I mean, if you put in a $50 bet there,
yeah, even $75,
and it's called, yeah. you'll end up winning money on this hand, even if you don't win the, or at least recouping your money you put in.
Yep, I would have to bet there.
Hmm. All right, well, he announces aces and queens, and only hears groans from the other player. small blind, the guy who raised us, shows ace king.
Oh yeah, ace king.
Seat 10 also shows ace king. And seat one shows 8-6 of diamonds and slams those hands on the table. He storms out cursing.
Holy cow, that was one of the hands we talked about. He had the diamond draw and the two pair. Holy cow. Oh man, he must be ripping.
All right, so our hero says, I can't believe I was the only one betting this hand. He raked in the mammoth pot, placed two more orbits, cashed out with a healthy $420 profit. So it gets back to his original question, who played the hand the worst?
Wow.
I think it's clear for me. But
yeah, I think he did.
Really?
I think the ace-kings could have raised pre-flop, but they were trying to trap the guy. So they were doing the same thing we were doing. And maybe the ace-king should have raised after the flop when we bet. That might have been the best play. But you're not going to lose anybody who has 6-8 there now. So, but not, I'm not being results-oriented. I'm just saying that I think the ace-queen should have gotten out of the way much earlier. I would have folded a long time ago and maybe even pre-flop. So I feel like the ace-queen shouldn't even have been in the hand, whereas the ace-king was trying to trap the other guys, and it didn't work out that way. And then he was milking it after that flop, and then was going to check. His plan was to check raise in the turn, which he did. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's the ace queen. I think our hero played it the worst.
I have no love for Mr. 8-6 of diamonds.
Well, he got it all in on the turn. He did everything he could do after that.
All right. Here's the thing. One, he looked in with this craptastic hand in a pot where he knows a guy, or at least this is obviously from our point of view. So maybe everybody else doesn't see this crazy guy in the button the way we do. But I would have to think that he thinks that it's going to get raised. And again, that's even better than trying to stack someone with, because it very well could be the same kind of hand that this crazy guy has. So I'm definitely not getting involved in this hand at all with 8-6 of diamonds. However, when I flop bottom two pair with an ace on the board, and I don't care what game I'm in, but particularly in this game, I am playing that fast on the flop.
Yeah.
Because you're so vulnerable to an ace. I mean, wherever the ace kicker is. I mean, this is what happened here. Ace queen got there. Boom, two pair. He had us into the river. King gets there, he loses.
So you're thinking he should have raised our bet.
Two pair. If I played that hand, I wanna play big there. So I'm going back to the flop here. And we bet 40 by accident.
No, the flop was 20, right? Yeah, we bet 20, and 10 calls 20. So at that point, you're saying seat one should raise.
Yeah, and he had, let's see, seat one had 76 behind before the $20 bet on the flop.
Yeah, so he has almost no money, so what's the point of raising? He's trying to get as much as he can for his two pair. Plus, he still has the maniac behind in the act, which at that point is still in the hand.
I think there's a lot of people that would play a naked ace for a $50 raise there, knowing that they didn't have to put anything else in the pot. So if he shoves that and made a 56 more on top, he'd probably get a collar out of it.
I don't know. If I have ace 10, I might let it go. Plus, I have more people behind me to act as that guy, so he's probably hoping to get as much money. You know, I mean, yeah, I think there's an argument for saying that he should have played it differently, but when you only have $50 left, you know, and you got guys behind you like a maniac, maybe you do just call along and hope your two pair holds up, because you're thinking a guy has ace king. You're only going to get 50 out of him, but if you go 20, 20, 20, you got 60. And then now you've got another whole street where they're going to put some more money in. You're going to get your final 39 in or whatever it is, or 19, when the guy bet 40. So I don't really think it's that bad of a play when you're short that short. You know, just shoving and hoping to scare everybody out, which could happen. That might happen, though. That's what I'm saying, though.
And then,
why do you want that
fine,
to happen?
Because my hand's vulnerable.
Yeah.
At that point, I mean, you've got 40 plus the preflop action, which was, what, 20? You got $60 in the pot right now. And you had 56 behind. Yeah. I'm happy taking 60 there. And.
But it's only 36 more to call, right? To someone, is that what you're saying? All I'm saying is that you have literally one more barrel in you. Yeah. But I'm saying to the guy who already bet 20 and the other guy who called, it's only 36 to them. I don't know. It just seems to me that if I shove it there, I might get people to fold. And I don't know if I want them to fold, because you want like an ace king to call you and be vulnerable for three outs. I'm not that vulnerable if it's just a one pair aces, you know? I mean, yeah, you're vulnerable to it going runner pair. That's better than, you know, give him aces up. But really, it's three outs you're vulnerable to the ace that bet. And then if they have their other aces, then...
Well, potentially, depending on what everybody else has, too. Remember, we were talking about this hand, there were no draws out there.
Yeah, no, I know.
The other thing, too, on the turn, and I can't fold on the turn at this point, but, I mean, at that point, that guy has to realize he's probably behind, too, right?
The guy with two pair, or...
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean,
I mean, obviously he wasn't.
The only hand that he's behind to is a set, which is very unlikely because he has two of the cards.
Oh,
so
he's behind ace-8 and ace-6 as well.
Right. But we were also just talking before that pre-flop, I don't know if ace-8 and ace-6 are actually in this hand. There were very few hands we were talking about that.
Well, it wasn't raised, right?
Right. I don't think we're behind ace-8 and ace-6 at that point. I don't know. I mean, I could see him playing it differently, but I don't think he played it worse than ace-queen, especially because he was still short. If he had a ton of money, I raise there. But when you're so short, you're looking to really get as much money in as the middle as possible and hope your two-pair hold up. That's a good hand, two-pair at that point. I don't think I'm behind ace-8 or ace-6, to be honest. But
I'd rather win. In that situation, I'd rather go heads-up with someone for my last 56 than to have three people drawing against me.
Oh, yeah.
And try to milk twice as much out of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting. You can go either way on it. I can. I mean, I still think the ace queen probably shouldn't even have been in the hand and certainly should have gotten out turn. But
well, I don't think either one of them should have been in the hand. Right. And I'll defend the ace king for limping. I knew you already did too. And you got a player at the hand. That's a different hand for me than ace queen.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to let that guy, you know, pop into 24 and then re-raise him with ace king.
Yeah.
Just wild that you're up against another ace queen or another ace king and an ace queen.
Yeah.
All right, John, we appreciate you sending in your hand to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we are going to be happy to give you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store if you did not send a hand a weekend. But send it in, and you too might win something great like that.
I'd like to thank our 2011 Antiup Magazine Player of the Year, Daryl Fish, for joining us today. A lot of fun, and always appreciate when guys come on the show for us. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of antiupmagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.